Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you might remember earlier in the year we spoke to John O'Driscoll and some of his mates, and they were doing the world's toughest row, raising money for Heart Children Ireland and Crumlin Children's Hospital Heart Centre. And John was doing it in memory of his daughter Saoirse, who was born with a congenital heart disease and died at the age of 13. Anyway, they are presenting the cheque today in the Mansion House, hosted by the Lord Mayor Emma Blane. And John will be handing over a cheque to the two charities, Heart Children Ireland and Crumlin Children's Hospital Heart Centre, a cheque valued at €575,841.
Wow.
That's spectacular. And John asked me to thank you for all your support, psychological support and financial support. And I just want to say thank you. So that's a big day for them presenting that cheque. So well done to everybody involved there. Now, have you ever heard of the Metal Man near Tramore? I've been down there, never heard of it before. Have you ever heard of Belmullet's Musical Bridge? Probably haven't. Or did you know there are quite a few pyramids scattered across this country of ours? Well, my next guest has collected all of these fascinating treasures in the book Ireland's Curious Places. Michael Feuer, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you and to your listeners as well, of course.
Congratulations on the book, Michael.
Thank you.
I really
you.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And I will be dipping into it in the future.
Good.
And I'll
good
be recommending it to people. It is the type of book you can put down beside the loo.
That's absolutely it. I mentioned a few times and I was jumped on by a lot of people saying,
were you?
It's a good toilet book.
Well, a friend of mine likes to call them good Lou Reeds.
Good Lou Reeds.
I'll
run with that.
Yes,
I'll run with that. Yes, indeed.
How would you describe it to people, Michael?
Well, it's a book that's, I hope, full of interesting, quirky, historic, amazing places around Ireland that you can pick up and, you know, read for 10 minutes and then leave it down and pick it up again another time and read with lots of beautiful photographs, most of which I took myself.
And how did it come about?
It came about really through the fact that I'd never travelled very much outside of Waterford, my home county, and Dublin, where I've lived most of my life, until about 1992, when I did a book called The Waymark Trails of Ireland, which sent me off walking 800 miles around the place, sent me off into the lesser known rural areas of the country. And for the very first time, I had this intimate view of Ireland, which I'd never had before, a kind of an intimate view of its villages, its kind of ever-changing landscapes, and its people, the variety of people who live in the rural parts. And I found it utterly fascinating. And I came across lots of interesting and quirky things that didn't necessarily fit the book I was writing, but I took my notes and I took photographs at the same time. And these all collected in my journals over the years. And then, I think it was last year sometime or the year before, I said, why don't I gather them all together and see do they make a book? Do they make a book? And I did, and Gil, luckily enough, believed they made a book.
Yeah.
And they've published, they've done a beautiful job on publishing this particular.
So decades in the making, really.
Well, over the years.
Yes, I know.
Collected
I know.
Stuff.
Yes, yes.
Collected
stuff.
See, a lot of people see stuff and just walk by and say, oh, there was a great thing there. But I'm afraid I'm very focused. Yeah. I just write it down. I took the photographs and just put them in the journal.
There seem to be more of these curious places in Munster. Is that just because that's where you're from?
Well, Munster is the biggest.
Is it? Yeah.
Is the biggest province.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose I'm from Munster.
But it has so Cork and Kerry, two big counties.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the biggest province. Yeah.
Yes.
So a lot of them would. Yeah, a lot of them would come from there.
Okay. And the one I mentioned is in Munster, the Metal Man near Tramore.
Yeah.
Now, he's 12 foot tall and I've never noticed him.
How
did I not notice him?
Well, because you haven't taken a walk out along the cliffs there or taken a walk out or drive out the road. You've seen the pillars.
Yes.
Just to explain for your listeners, Tramore Bay was a dangerous area in the years of sail because ships who had not much in the way of navigation and were powered by the wind would sometimes pass by Waterford Harbour by mistake, not having seen Hook Head. And then they'd see this big opening with headlands on both sides and think that's Waterford Harbour and would turn their ship in. And if the wind was blowing from the south, they were blown in on the beach. And a very large transport coming back from the Peninsular Wars went on the beach in the, I think it was about 1822 or thereabouts, and 300 people were drowned in front of the people in Tramore who stood on the beach just watching all this happen. It was appalling. And, you know, in those days, officers brought their ladies, their wives and their children with them to war. That's what you did in those days. So they were all drowned as well. So Lloyd's of London decided we've got to do something about this. So they erected two pillars on Brownstown Head on the east side, and they erected three pillars on Newtown Head on the west side. And on top, they put the metal man. He's a typical sailor of the period, and he's pointing out to sea saying, "Get out of there. Don't come in here. You're in trouble if you come in here."
But he's no function.
Well, that's, yeah, but it's a kind of a decorative function.
Yes.
A decorative function. But remember,
like, even if they put a light on his head or something, or a big speaker, well, saying, see, don't come in here.
Those pillars are no longer pure white, yes, but they were originally white. So it's a kind of a, there were going to be people on the mall, I'm told. There were going to be men on the mall, but they ran out of money.
And like any of these things over the years, traditions evolved around
yes,
it.
Yes, of course.
And what was the tradition around that?
The tradition and that was, it's a very chauvinistic one, is that if a girl hops around on one foot around the pillar all the way around, she'll be married within the 6 month.
And does she have to do it backwards or frontwards?
Oh, frontwards.
No. Because there's around town in Kildare, and there was a thing if you had a wart or something like that, and you walked backwards around it 12 times and then put a bit of string on the wart.
I think marriage is a bit more serious than warts.
It is. Now, people would be surprised to know there are pyramids in Ireland.
Yes, there are many, actually, quite many.
Which is the most famous one?
I've actually got two in my book.
But this one in Wicklow, is it said to be the largest pyramid outside of Egypt? No.
Not at all.
No, that's BS.
Who said that? I didn't say that.
I think it's in the book. I couldn't have made it up.
No, it's the largest, probably the largest pyramid in Ireland.
Right.
But certainly not the largest pyramid. It was built by the Howard family.
Right.
From nearby. He became the Viscount of Wicklow in about 1780 something or other. And when he became the Viscount of Wicklow, he decided, I need a proper burial place for my family now. So this amazing pyramid, and you have to remember at that time, at the end of the 18th century, pyramids had been discovered by the Napoleonic Wars in Egypt, and people were fascinated. And there was a lot of magic about a pyramid being a magic shape. So this seemed to be the thing to do. So he had a pyramid built, and there was space for 33 coffins in it. But just to show the time of the ascendancy was coming to a halt in Ireland, I think there were 11 burials eventually.
It's a big enough structure, 9 metres tall.
8 metres tall.
8 metres tall.
But I mean, I'm sorry, Ray.
I think it's 8 square metres and 9 metres tall.
It's 8 square metres and 8 metres tall.
Well, we're going to have her out.
No, we won't. Listen, what's in a metre?
Well, 3 foot as it happens, Michael.
Well, that's true. I've only got two. How many have you got?
Okay. Now, I've been to this church in Carrigunshannon. The smallest church in Ireland.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And you've been to it, yeah.
And within two doors, there used to be this amazing shop pub. It was a pub that sold shoes. So you could go in and get a couple of pints and pick out a pair
of shoes. And get your shoes at the same time. Yeah, yes, yeah. Of course, yeah.
But this church, so it's a lot to offer, Carrigunshannon. So tell us about this church.
This is the smallest chapel in Ireland, certainly the smallest chapel in Ireland. It's the Costello Chapel. And Mr. Costello, at the end of the 19th century, was a rather rich and very devout Catholic businessman. But he was terribly devoted to his wife, Mary. And when she died, he persuaded the church, the Catholic Church in Carrick, that he wanted to build a chapel in honour of her, where she would be buried.
Mm.
And indeed, the church, you know, because he was obviously looking after the church financially.
The Piper, yeah.
Yeah, he was doing this. So they allowed him build this tiny, tiny chapel. And she's buried in a crypt there. But her burial place is covered with a sheet of very early armoured glass. So you can look down at her coffin.
It's a fascinating place.
And when he died, he was similarly buried there. He had mass said every week for the rest of his life, for her in this chapel, in this tiny. And it's a beautiful, you know, it's a beautiful building.
Yes.
It's the very finest of materials have been used in marbles and granites and all the rest. Beautiful building.
Miniature church.
And it's just so unusual.
Yes,
in the
is.
Middle of nowhere, you see this tiny church.
Yeah. Now, it's not the Whistling Bridge in Belmullet. It's the Musical Bridge.
The Musical Bridge on the way to Belmullet.
Yes.
It's in the middle of one of Ireland's largest wildernesses. That area out there between, let's say, between Castlebar and Belmullet is, you know, huge.
There's not much there.
Fantastic wilderness. So the road only came to Belmullet, I think, in about 1820 or something like that. And even at that stage, the rivers had, you had to ford the river. There were no bridges. But from the time the road came, in 10 years, when the road came first, there were three houses in Belmullet. And when the road, 10 years after the road was built, there were 130 houses. Mm. So, I mean, the road meant everything. Anyway, the road wasn't enough. They needed bridges. So William Bald, one of our famous Scottish engineers who came over to look after Ireland, he designed the bridge there. And the bridge is one of the biggest bridges in that particular area. And it took 20 years to build, partly because the foundation conditions in a bog are not the best, not the best. But anyway, it was built. But the strange thing about it is it's become known as the Musical Bridge because for some reason, the limestone caps on the walls on either side of the bridge are kind of loose. And if you get a rock, you can run along it and play it like a xylophone.
Right.
And some people actually have got the notes right and can go running up and down and play actual tunes.
How did people discover that and what were they doing at the time?
God knows. I mean, people have an awful lot of spare time, obviously,
they do,
out
they
there.
Do.
What?
They do. Okay, we go across the country then to Wicklow. I've stayed in this lighthouse because it's owned by the
Landmark Trust.
The Landmark Trust, yes. And I think you can still stay in it, can't you?
You can indeed. You can indeed.
And I didn't. I sort of thought it was odd, but didn't question it at the time.
Yes.
So there was the one we stayed in. And then I suppose within 100 metres, there was another lighthouse.
That's right.
Why
That's
two
right.
together?
Well, back in the days of sail, as I said before, it was a dangerous business. And lighthouses were built, began to be built, let's say, at the end of the 18th century. In the main, because trade, you know, trade was dependent on the shipping and shipping was dependent on knowing where they were at any one particular point in time. So lighthouses were planned for various parts of the coast, particularly bits that stuck out like Wicklow Head, which is, I think it may be the easterlymost point of the south of Ireland. So lighthouses were being placed along with lights that shone with different, say, three flashes or two flashes or six flashes. So navigators would know, oh, yes, that's Hook Lighthouse or that's whatever it is. Anyway, Halpin was the great lighthouse designer in the middle or the early 19th century. And he didn't take the advice of the locals who said, you can't put a lighthouse up there. You can't do it because there's always a fog there and nobody will see anything. But he went ahead and he built probably one of the most elaborate and
this
beautiful.
This is the one that I stayed in.
Yeah,
yes,
one of the most elaborate and beautiful lighthouses in Ireland. It stands up on the top of Wicklow Head, and within a few years of it beginning operations, it's.
Oh, they had to build another one.
Well, one had to be built down the cliffs below where the fog was.
So great for accommodation, but rubbish at what it was built.
Yeah, but even for accommodation, I mean, you would have noticed that it's 160 steps up to the kitchen.
Yeah. I remember I forgot my phone, had to go back up. So that's that in Wicklow. It's amazing. I better remind people the name of the book, Ireland's Curious Places, 100 Fascinating Lesser Known Treasures to Discover from all over the country, written by Michael Feuer. The cover picture, Michael.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, that's down in a place called Villierstown.
In County Waterford.
In County Waterford. And Villierstown is a beautiful estate village. Very beautiful estate village. And when the son of the landlord got married, they had their honeymoon in England and they would have seen the Brighton Pavilion, which had been designed for the Regency. This amazing sort of Indian domes all
Indian
over the place.
Inspired, yes.
Indian inspired,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
So they were very fascinated by that. So when they came back from their honeymoon, his father had this building built as a gateway to the estate. And it is again, an Indian-inspired building. Most unusual thing to come across.
Yes.
In the Midlands, or in, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And it's very beautiful. It's so beautiful that it was built out of cardboard originally. It was just a sort of a thing when they were coming.
Oh, sort of a gantry, a welcome home.
When they were coming home, they put it up quickly. Yeah. But it was so liked that it's now been, well, then it was rebuilt using proper copper and stone and, you know, it's now, and it's still there. So we're talking about, you know, 100 years later, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's an amazing looking thing. There's so much in it. I don't know where to go because we're running out of time. I mentioned this in the opener, so we better get back to it. Kilmacduagh Tower.
Kilmacduagh Tower, yes.
It's leaning. Is it?
It's Galway's leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yeah.
It's a round tower, which a lot of round towers that were being built during the time they built them actually fell down.
Right.
Because the foundation conditions weren't right. In this particular case, the foundation conditions weren't right. So it leaned a bit. It leaned a metre at the top.
Right.
And that's the 3 feet we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
It leaned a metre at the top. But in fact, it has stayed there. It has been glued together by the wonderful mortar they've used. So it tends to be called the Pisa of Galway.
I really enjoyed the book. I'm going to say it again. A lot of the stuff in it were built out of vanity.
Yes, of course.
That's a theme, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is. Yes,
people with cairns and monuments.
Well, people with money first.
Yes, money.
People with money first.
Money and vanity.
And vanity. They go together very well.
Yeah. Ireland's Curious Places. Michael Feuer. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for coming
You're
in.
You're very welcome indeed. Very welcome.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.